Welcome to Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU at 89.1 FM, the show that brings you in-depth coverage of local, regional, and national environmental issues. I'm Donna Stevens, the Executive Director of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, a local watershed protection nonprofit, and your host for today's program. This year is rapidly coming to an end, so we thought we would take some time to reflect on 2015 and revisit some of the big issues that we've talked about throughout the year. As always, there were some positive developments and some events that weren't quite so good. Joining me here in the studio are my Earth Matters co-hosts, Allison Civic and Nathan Newcomer. Allison is the Executive Director of GRIP, Gila Resources Information Project, and Gila Conservation Coalition. And Nathan is the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. Welcome, Allison and Nathan.
Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning.
So I thought we would start off today by talking about the Gila River diversion, and if you've been listening to the show at all, and I certainly hope you have been, this is a topic that we've covered a lot because it's probably the biggest environmental issue here locally, and it has moved beyond the local level to the regional and the national level now. So, Allison, I thought I would start by asking you to summarize what happened in 2015 and where we stand now with the diversion.
Well, where to begin?
Right.
I will begin at the end of 2014, actually. As people probably recall, there was a big milestone in November of 2014 where the Interstate Stream Commission voted to move forward with planning for a New Mexico unit, otherwise known as a Gila River Diversion Project. And so that started the clock ticking. 1 year from that point, the New Mexico CAP entity had to be formed, and 1 year from that point, the New Mexico unit agreement had to be signed. So what we saw in 2015, and these are all milestones under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, that is the piece of federal legislation signed in 2004 that basically gives New Mexico the right to divert Gila River water. And so in 2015, we saw the formation of the New Mexico CAP entity, which is the local group comprised of 13 counties, municipalities, and irrigation ditch associations. I should note that Silver City, Baird, and Columbus did not sign on to the CAP entity. So 13 local governmental groups, along with the Interstate Stream Commission, which is a non-voting member, they formed the CAP entity. The CAP entity was formed in July, August of this year. And once it was formed, they started negotiating the New Mexico unit agreement. And much to everybody's surprise, the Department of Interior showed up at one of the CAP entity meetings, I believe in July, and said, you know, we want some supplemental terms to the New Mexico unit agreement negotiated. And they went through this whole laundry list of things that they wanted to clarify for the local entity, things that they wanted to make sure that everybody understood moving forward. And these were very important things like, how much money is really available to New Mexico to develop Gila River water? It's not as much as people thought. The act says up to $128 million, up to $128 million. So $66 million of that $128 is guaranteed. We've been getting that since 2012 and 10 equal installments of about $9 million. But then there are two other chunks of money, which amount to about $62 million. Those pots of money are very uncertain and highly unlikely that New Mexico is going to get that money. So we're dealing with maybe $90 million total for a diversion project that is estimated to cost, just construction alone, $800 million to $1 billion. So the supplemental terms also outlined things like financial feasibility is going to have to be demonstrated before contracts are signed, that the New Mexico unit will have to be constructed to federal design standards. That's something very important because some of the local diversionistas have said that the feds always overbuild things, overdesign things. The costs are overestimated. But, you know, here's an instance where the Department of Interior is basically saying, hey, this diversion project, if you're moving forward under the act, it's going to be a federal project. A federal part of the Central Arizona project has to be built to federal design standards. There are a number of other things we can talk about.
Okay. So how much did they say really would be available for a diversion?
So what is guaranteed is the $66 million, but it gets adjusted for inflation using the construction cost index. So if you use that, it comes up to about $90 million or so. So at best, $100 million. So we're talking about a tenth of the potential cost, construction cost, of a diversion project. And as we've talked a lot over the last number of years here on Earth Matters, who picks up the shortfall? Water users, taxpayers. $900 million is a huge amount of money for a very poor part of the state. $90 million is a huge amount of money for the taxpayers of New Mexico to pick up, given all the other issues that we're dealing with in the state, like, you know, we're last in the state or last in the country, sorry, for child well-being. We have the most number of children in poverty, education issues, never mind $2 billion and other infrastructure needs in the state over the next 20 years. So, you know, the state has a lot of needs, and this diversion project is, you know, we've talked a lot about how it's not really the most cost-effective nor efficient way to meet Southwest New Mexico's water needs. So really, it's a project that doesn't need to be done for the amount of cost we're talking about and the opportunity costs of moving forward with such a costly project when we have all these other needs.
What are some of the projects that would meet our water needs in a more efficient and inexpensive way?
Well, we've talked a lot about all the non-diversion alternatives, things like municipal conservation, agricultural conservation, infrastructure improvements like the Grant County Regional Water Supply Project. The ISC did fund most of these except for watershed restoration, but the amount of money that was provided to the non-diversion alternatives, somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% on average, really isn't enough in some cases to get these projects implemented. For instance, the irrigation improvements, the ditch associations, you know, they're going to have a hard time funding $1 million ditch improvement projects with, you know, what's been given to them under the Arizona Water Settlements Act of about $200,000. So we'll see if those projects ever really get done. But, you know, things like the Grant County Regional Water Supply Project, the intercommunity pipeline between Silver City and the mining district, you know, that's something that's gotten a lot of attention. Our local elected officials and local governments are working very hard in finding other sources of funding for that project. That project will benefit 26,000 people in Grant County. You know, an excellent project. It also balances recharge from the Silver City Wastewater Treatment Plant with new groundwater development over by the Grant County Airport. So it really is an example of sustainable groundwater management. So that's a great project, and I hope we can see additional funding identified for that project.
So about a month ago, the Secretary of the Interior, Sally Jewell, signed the New Mexico Unit Agreement. Does that mean that the diversion is going to happen, or what did that really mean when that happened?
The Department of Interior signed off on the New Mexico Unit Agreement with this set of supplemental terms I mentioned earlier. And really what this does is triggers the next round of review. So environmental review under the National Environmental Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, and also some other laws that will come into play, the Endangered Species Act, the National Historic Preservation Act, a whole number of federal laws that the New Mexico unit will have to comply with. So right now, the New Mexico CAP entity really doesn't have a project. They say that all of the projects that have been studied to date, they don't like. And so they're scrambling right now to come up with a proposed action. So after spending $5 million and after 10 plus years of planning, they say they don't have a project, and now they have to scramble in the next few weeks to identify something. Because what's happening is they are going to be contracting through the Interstate Stream Commission for an engineering firm to develop a 30% design for this proposed New Mexico unit project. So they have to know what they want to do in order to design it to the 30% level. And they don't know what they want to do. So they're, I'm sure, probably working over the holidays. And estimates have been that scoping, which is the first step under the National Environmental Policy Act, is going to start sometime mid-2016, sometime this summer. That's really the next step for us here publicly is, you know, watch out for the next public meetings under NEPA scoping. And also the New Mexico CAP entity is meeting every month. So come to those meetings if you're interested in finding out more about what the CAP entity is up to and what they really are thinking about.
So maybe after 10 years at their next meeting in a couple weeks, we'll get to find out what the project is?
Maybe. January 14th is the next meeting.
Okay.
9 o'clock, I believe, in the Grant County Administration Building.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back after this short break, and I promise I will bring co-host Nathan Newcomer into the discussion at that time. So please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. I'm Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. And my guests today are some voices that are familiar to you. My Earth Matters co-hosts, Nathan Newcomer of New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and Allison Civic of Gila Conservation Coalition and GRIP. So, Nathan, you haven't said much here so far. So I'm going to continue with what we were talking about, the Gila River diversion issue, and ask you to tell us what our senators have said, our federal senators, Martin Heinrich and Tom Udall.
Yeah, I think it's really important for the public to understand that both of our senators, Senator Tom Udall and Senator Martin Heinrich, have come out publicly and made statements saying that they don't think this is a good idea. Senator Tom Udall specifically said, based on everything I've seen so far, this project simply isn't financially realistic or environmentally wise. Given federal budget constraints, funding outside the Arizona Water Settlements Act is extremely unlikely. Further, many New Mexicans are rightly concerned about the extremely high cost of this project and the damage that it could do to our thriving tourism and sporting businesses. The Gila is the last free-flowing main stem river in New Mexico. To sacrifice it to a project that the state can't afford and that might not ever yield enough water would be irresponsible. I think those are pretty strong words.
Pretty strong.
From Senator Udall. And Senator Heinrich had some equally strong words. He said, this is Senator Heinrich speaking in a statement, the Gila is the last free-flowing river in the Southwest. Its natural hydrology and gallery of riparian forests make it a unique, last-of-its-kind gem that is important to sportsmen, farmers, and tourists alike. We owe New Mexico's taxpayers cost-effective, science-based solutions if we are to manage our limited water supplies in this era of drought, climate change, and constrained budgets. Damming or diverting the Gila River simply does not meet that standard.
Yay, Senators Heinrich and Udall.
Yeah, those are good words. That's
absolutely
great to hear.
Very good. So, like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, as usual, this year was kind of a mixed bag of good and bad things.
Right.
And we've talked about the Gila River diversion, which we think is pretty terrible. But also some good things have happened, like the supplemental terms that Allison talked about and what you just read from our federal senators. And at the end of 2015, New Mexico has more protected public land than it did at the beginning of the year, which is a good thing. Can you talk about that a little bit, Nathan?
Yeah, sure. We've been really fortunate in the last couple of years, not just 2015, but 2014. We saw two new national monuments designated, the Rio Grande del Norte up in Taos County, which is about 250,000 acres of protected public land. And then we had the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument designated in Doniana County outside of Las Cruces, which was about 500,000 acres of public land protected. And then in February of this year, we had the Columbine Hondo Wilderness Area designated also in Taos County, right next to the Wheeler Peak Wilderness right outside of Taos, and that was 45,000 acres. We also had the Vallis Caldera was transferred from – the Vallis Caldera was a sort of like a private ranch at one point back in the 80s, and it went through various different sort of management policies and activities until finally this year the Congress decided to transfer the Vallis Caldera to the National Park Service, which is great for a lot of many reasons. But essentially, yeah, we've gotten close to 1 million acres of protected land here in New Mexico since 2014, and 2015 hasn't been really much of an exception of that, with the Columbine Hondo being essentially a campaign that's been in the works for 20 years to protect some of the highest alpine country left in the state of New Mexico. So we're making progress. It seems like sometimes we go through droughts where we don't have any land protected for many, many years, and then we kind of get a year or two where we get acres and acres of lands protected, and that's just kind of the nature of public lands protection, I think.
Yeah, because it takes a really long time for these things to actually happen.
Yeah.
How do these areas get designated as wilderness? What's the process there?
So a wilderness area can only be designated through an act of Congress. So it has to be legislation that is crafted through the House of Representatives and through the Senate. And then it has to pass both chambers of Congress. And then it has to be signed into law by the president. That's the only way that a wilderness area can be designated. There are other ways that federal agencies can sort of provide interim protection, such as wilderness study areas or recommended wilderness areas, but those don't carry the same weight in terms of permanent protection like a wilderness bill would through Congress.
Yeah, so what is given could also be taketh away,
correct.
Right?
Right.
I wanted to ask you about, you touched on this a little bit, about the Vallis Caldera. So what will it really do to transfer that to the National Park Service? What's really the difference in management and protection?
So the Vallis Caldera, for people who aren't familiar with it, it's outside of the, it's right up against the Jemez Mountains. It's in the Jemez Mountains, right outside of Jemez Springs, the town of Jemez Springs. It's about a 100,000-acre area. For many years, it was managed as like a private sort of ranch. And then it got transferred to a preserve. And the preserve had this like governing body agency that sort of regulated who could go in, when they could go in, how many people could access the area. It was very limited, very restricted. And now that it's being transferred to the Park Service, they're having to, it's not all finalized yet, but they're having to kind of restructure this management agency body now that's within the Park Service. But the access to the Vallis Caldera is now increased. So people will be able to go hunting, hiking, fishing, and recreational activities with vehicles, as well as just wandering around backcountry access more than they could have in the past. So they're going to try and keep managing the Vallis Caldera for its like natural beauty, try not to have rampant access everywhere, but the access to the public is now more increased. So a lot of people are really excited about that because it really is a special gem. It's kind of like a little mini Yellowstone in a way that we have here in New Mexico, the Vallis Caldera is. And I think that the fact that it got transferred to the Park Service was sort of, it had been a long time coming. A lot of people have really wanted to see that happen for a number of years, and it just took this amount of time for it to finally get there.
You were saying last week, you told me that the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance has been working to expand the Pecos Wilderness Area in the Santa Fe National Forest. Can you talk about that? What's going on there?
Yeah, so the Pecos Wilderness was designated in 1964, the year the Wilderness Act was passed. And it protected a little over 200,000 acres within the Pecos National Forest as the wilderness. And about 10 years ago, I was looking at maps throughout the entire state of New Mexico. We started noticing all these things called roadless areas or inventoried roadless areas that are in the national forest all across New Mexico. And the Pecos had about 150,000 acres of roadless land immediately adjacent to the existing Pecos wilderness. And so we said, well, you know, the Pecos is a really you know, unique area, and people love to go there and hike there. So let's take a look at seeing what we can't do to maybe expand the Pecos Wilderness. And so we started that process about 10 years ago. And it wasn't until recently where we started to really make a concerted effort to reach out to local elected officials, meet with all the local land grants, all with the acequia owners, with the tribes that live up around the Pecos watershed and the Pecos Wilderness. And we just started to find a lot of local community support for protecting these roadless areas and adding them to the Pecos Wilderness. And so we began a sort of grassroots ground effort, kind of quietly, just, you know, word of mouth, talking with people one-on-one. And then this year, we publicly launched a campaign to say, yes, we would like to expand the Pecos Wilderness by about 120,000 acres. We identified 150,000 acres that could be added, but that the 120,000 acres sort of met the threshold of wilderness, and the other 30,000 acres we're going to be working to kind of designate as special management areas or other special use areas that would be more compatible with some of the existing uses that are already currently happening on the ground.
So for our listeners who aren't very familiar with what wilderness actually means, how would transferring these lands, which are already public lands,
right,
how would transferring them into the wilderness preservation system actually change things?
So it would. The Wilderness Act specifically states that you cannot mar or trammel, if you will, or destroy a land that is in wilderness designation. There's no mining, there's no logging, there's no oil and gas development, there's no selling off of public lands for private development, there's no motorized access into wilderness areas. You can hike, hunt, fish, backpack, horseback ride, kayak, canoe, all the things that we sort of like associate with outdoor activity, but just not with the motorized, mechanized means.
Okay.
And so it would permanently protect those resources forever. And that's the sort of gold standard of the Wilderness Act, is that once an area is designated as wilderness, it will remain as such into perpetuity. That's the idea, to protect it for us, for our kids, for our grandkids and their kids.
And the local people that you were talking about, who the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance has reached out to, these people support wilderness because what?
Well, the Pecos Wilderness is unique in that it has five different counties that it intersects with. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge constituency of various interests up there. You've got ranchers that are involved in it. You've got acequias, which are, people may not be familiar with that very much down here in the South, but acequias are essentially irrigators that use water from the mountains to irrigate their fields and their crops, really small arroyos and ditches that they have to clean out every year. It's a northern New Mexico kind of thing. And working with them has been challenging and difficult at times, but once they've realized that wilderness designation would not impact their ability to irrigate water from the watershed, they've realized that, hey, protecting the watershed is actually a good idea. It makes sense.
Right.
Same thing with land grant heirs. Land grants, you know, they slowly have been coming on board. The hunting and fishing community is huge up in the Pecos area. So those are definitely people that we've been reaching out to. But again, you know, you've got five different counties that include Santa Fe County, which, you know, Santa Fe is a very populated sort of modernistic society, if you will,
right,
compared to like Mora County, which is, you know, one county over from Las Vegas County, that's very rural, you know, highly, heavily Hispanic. And then you've got Taos County, and then you've got tribes like the Picaris Pueblo up there as well. So it's been a long time to try and work on this campaign, but finally we've gotten to a point where we've gotten four county commissions that have passed resolutions supporting expansions of the Pecos Wilderness, and then we're just working on the last one, which is Taos County, to get them to sign off on it.
That's really good. I'm really glad to hear that. Maybe our southern county commissions will talk to the ones up north and see the light. Huh?
Yeah, we've got our work cut out for us down here.
We do. In 2009, the Sabinoso Wilderness Area was designated through an act of Congress, and Senator Tom Udall worked very hard on this legislation while he was a congressman for northern New Mexico. And since this wilderness was designated, there hasn't been any public access to the area, but I understand that has recently changed.
Yeah, I can tell our listeners, this was the second wilderness bill that the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance worked on that we actually were successful in designating. The Sabinoso Wilderness Area is about 30 miles west of the town of Las Vegas, New Mexico. It's Bureau of Land Management land. It's out sort of on the eastern plains. When you think of the eastern plains of New Mexico, most folks just think of private property and flat land. But the Sabinoso is a really deep chasm canyon that has the Canadian River that runs through it. And it protected about 20,000 acres of this Bureau of Land Management land in 2009, as you mentioned. And ever since then, you haven't been able to access the Sabinoso Wilderness Area. It's been completely surrounded by private land. And so the only way to access it would be to illegally trespass on private property. So we've been working for a number of years with the Bureau of Land Management and private property owners out in that area to try and gain access. And very recently, we were able to broker a deal with a rancher in the area to provide an easement for essentially vehicle access to drive through their property and access the Sabinoso Wilderness. So it's kind of funny, you know, working on an area to protect it and have never seen it before. And right. 7 years later now, we might be able to actually go out there and see it. So that's pretty great news.
That's really good. So I want to talk some more about special designations when we come back from our break. So please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. Today, my guests are my Earth Matters co-hosts, Nathan Newcomer of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project and Gila Conservation Coalition. Just before the break, I was asking Nathan about wilderness issues. And I understand that Representative Steve Pierce has a wilderness study area release bill, and this is for wilderness study areas in Hidalgo and Luna counties. Can you tell us what that bill is about, please?
Yeah, so Congressman Steve Pierce this year introduced a bill to get rid of wilderness study areas in Hidalgo and Luna County. And Hidalgo County in particular has about 9 wilderness study areas that are totally in the hundreds of thousands of acres, places like the Pelencillo Mountains, the Florida Mountains, the Gila Lower Box, where the Gila River runs through it, the Big Hatchet Mountains, Alamo Hueco Mountains. And Congressman Pierce has a long history and legacy of trying to undermine conservation and public lands protection. And this is just one more example of that. His reasoning for this is saying that by releasing these areas from wilderness study area status, we'll open them up to development, but by doing so, we'll increase wildlife habitat and restore watersheds. And I have to like say to myself, how can an elected official say something like that? Like, you're going to tell me that by opening up wild public lands to mining, to oil and gas development, that that's going to increase wildlife habitat and repair watersheds? The gall of this person, it really is shocking to me.
Maybe so, in some parallel universe, but not here on Earth.
Not on Earth, no. So Congressman Pierce is obviously not in touch with some of the values that a lot of us share in terms of protecting public lands in New Mexico, especially in southwestern New Mexico. So this is just a dangerous bill that the congressman is trying to do. And you never know when the political climate might shift to the left or to the right. And, you know, it's something that we should all be vigilant and be wary of.
I wanted to ask you another question, Nathan, about special designations. And this is about wild and scenic. Wild and Scenic River designation for the Gila River, the San Francisco River, and other streams. Can you tell us about this effort?
Yeah, so we've identified at least 400 miles of rivers and streams in the Gila National Forest that are eligible for Wild and Scenic River designation. And we had a show a couple of weeks ago talking about Wild and Scenic that our listeners can check out on Earth Matters and GMCR.org. But essentially, yeah, we're looking at permanently protecting rivers and streams in the Gila National Forest through the use of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. And what that would do would prevent things such as dams and diversions, large dams and diversions on the San Francisco River and on the Gila River. Minor earthen dams for irrigation, for watering crops, for all that kind of stuff would be allowed still. It's just none of these large-scale diversions and dam efforts that we've been talking about for the last couple of years would be allowed. And so we are looking at pursuing that path, which would require an act of Congress. We're also going to be working with the Forest Service through their plan revision on trying to establish some interim protections for the San Francisco River and the Gila River and the numerous other streams and creeks that are found throughout the Gila National Forest.
Okay, now I want to switch gears a little bit here and ask Allison Civic some questions about copper mining here in New Mexico. So I know that this year, 2015, the fight continued over the copper rule. Can you tell us, Allison, what is the copper rule and what happened this year?
Sure. So, Donna, the copper rule was a piece of state legislation. It came from back in 2009. The state legislature directed the Water Quality Control Commission to pass legislation for water quality standards for copper mining and dairies. And so what we've seen since 2009 is development of the dairy rule and the copper rule. So I'll just talk about the copper rule. But back in 2013, the Water Quality Control Commission promulgated what has been called the copper rule, which essentially allows copper mines to pollute groundwater under their mine sites. And it's our belief, based on the State Water Quality Act, that this allowing copper mines to pollute groundwater is illegal under the State Water Quality Act. And so we appealed to the Water Quality Control Commission their promulgation of this rule. They denied our appeal. We then appealed to the New Mexico Court of Appeals in 2015 and or 14, and earlier this year the Court of Appeals upheld the rule. We then petitioned the New Mexico Supreme Court for review of the case, and the Supreme Court granted our petition, as well as, I might add, the petition of the New Mexico Attorney General, who at the time was Gary King, and also Bill Olson, who was he's a retired New Mexico Environment Department Groundwater Quality Bureau Chief. And so, you know, we have these three petitions now that the Supreme Court is reviewing. And I think that this shows, you know, the Supreme Court only takes on 15% of the requests that it gets to review petitions or review cases. And so I think if there was any question that our appeals were in any way frivolous, they would not have taken this on. So I believe very strongly that these petitions are strong, and I think the Supreme Court probably thinks so as well, and that's why they're taking on the review. And so we'll expect at some point in 2016 a decision from the Supreme Court.
Okay. So the New Mexico Environment Department Secretary Ryan Flynn was in town several weeks ago lobbying for support of the copper rule. What was that all about?
Yeah, very interesting. I was completely surprised. So apparently there was a Gila Economic Development Alliance meeting over in Santa Clara, and the Environment Department Secretary was talking about the copper rule and encouraging people to call up Attorney General Hector Balderas and request that he drop the Attorney General's appeal to the Supreme Court of the copper rule. And we had a show a few weeks ago with New Mexico Environmental Law Center Executive Director Doug Micklejohn, where we talked a lot about the copper rule and mining and groundwater protection in the state. So people can listen to that story for more in-depth discussion, and that's available at gmcr.org. But essentially, I think Secretary Flynn is on this campaign of misinformation and somehow saying that, the copper rule was supported. There was only support for the copper rule in Grant County, which of course was completely wrong. The opponents of the copper rule outnumbered the supporters by 10 to 1 during public meetings, public hearings here in Grant County. A lot of opposition to this rule. And, you know, essentially what happened is Secretary Flynn took a rule that had been developed collaboratively between environmental and conservation groups, technical folks, and the Freeport-McMoRan's technical contractors, as well as the Environment Department's technical people. We came up with a rule that, you know, was okay for everybody. There are things that, you know, each party didn't like, but the rule was acceptable. People felt good about it. But then what happened was Freeport-McMoRan's attorneys got a hold of the rule, and they made a whole bunch of changes that Ryan Flynn was just accepted. It was sort of like accept all, and, you know, for people who do know track changes in Word, you know, just accepted all of these changes from Freeport-McMoRan's attorneys. And so we had a vastly different rule. And that's what went forward. That's what got promulgated. And so there has been discontent and opposition to this. Those of us in the environmental community who are part of this process feel completely taken advantage of and tricked in this process. Ryan Flynn was, you know, down here trying to get support. I think he probably knows that there's a very strong chance they're going to lose this case. So I think it was just a PR sort of tactic on his part to be down here trying to get people to drop the rule, or get people to contact the AG to get him to drop his appeal.
Well, it's pretty disappointing that the head of the Environment Department acts this way. I mean,
oh, yeah. I mean, he calls people in the environmental community, some of the most respected environmentalists, environmental organizations in the state, left-wing radical organizations and extremists. We've been called that as well. I mean, name-calling does not work.
No.
It doesn't work. I mean, our job is to protect the public's groundwater. The groundwater belongs to the public. It does not belong to Freeport-McMoRan. It does not belong to the dairy industry. It doesn't belong to industry. It belongs to the people of New Mexico. They're only given the right to use the water. And under the Water Quality Act, they are not allowed to pollute groundwater. Well, now copper mines are allowed to pollute groundwater under their mine sites. And so that's what we are opposed to. It's upholding the integrity of the State Water Quality Act. This is fundamental to how groundwater quality gets managed in the state of New Mexico.
Well, that's a perfect example of things moving backward in 2015.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm very positive for 2016 that the Supreme Court will perhaps overturn this, the copper rule.
Right. So there's another big copper mine being proposed for the Hillsboro area. Can you tell us a little bit about this copper flat mine?
Sure. So this is a polymetallic mine is what they're calling it. They will mine copper and some gold and other precious metals, as well as molybdenum. Now, this mine was operated in 1982 for 3.5 months. That's it. And then that company went bankrupt. So here we are seeing New Mexico Copper Corporation come in and try and develop this mine. And so there were a couple meetings last week, one in Hillsboro, one in Truth or Consequences, held by the Bureau of Land Management. The draft environmental impact statement under the National Environmental Policy Act came out. This mine is being proposed for both BLM land and private land. It's just a bit outside of Hillsboro. It's on Highway 152 between Hillsboro and I-25. So, you know, it's a major thoroughfare for people who want to get to the Gila National Forest between I-25 and Silver City. So traffic concerns as well as groundwater concerns, groundwater quality concerns. And a huge concern is water supply. So, you know, they're going to use something like 20,000 acre feet of water a year. Some of that they're saying will be recycled water. But the state engineer has only granted them water rights for 888 acre feet. So how will this mine be operational if they've only been given water rights for a fraction of the amount of water that they need? Mm-hmm. So another concern, there's going to be a permanent pit lake at the Copper Flat Mine once it stops operation. Their life of mine is about 12 years, so very short-lived mining operation. So lots of concerns. The public comment period has been extended to March 4th. So that's good news for people who want to review the environmental impact statement, which is available online. You can go to the GRIP website if you want more information. It's healerresources.info, and you can find out more about the Copper Flat Mine.
Great. I want to ask you another question about mining after we come back from our break. So please stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Donna Stevens, your host for today's program. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with my fellow Earth Matters co-hosts, Nathan Newcomer of New Mexico Wilderness Alliance and Allison Civic of Gila Conservation Coalition and GRIP, Gila Resources Information Project. I wanted to talk in the last part of the show about some of the upcoming issues and events in 2016. First, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about some projects that my group, Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, completed last year. Both of these projects involve streams in the Gila watershed that the New Mexico Environment Department lists as impaired. The Environment Department administers funding for groups to study the causes of these impairments and to recommend how to correct the problems. They call these studies watershed-based plans. And this year, my group, Upper Gila Watershed Alliance, or UGWA for short, completed two of these watershed-based plans. The first one is for Mogollon Creek, which flows into the Gila River just above the Cliff Gila Valley. Mogollon Creek was on the impaired streams list because it exceeds the state standard for aluminum. Mogollon Creek flows through the Gila Wilderness area, which means it can be accessed only on foot or by horseback. So to complete this project, we had to do both of those things, hike in and pack in with horses and mules. So over the last few years, what we did for this project was to collect water samples at five tributaries of Mogollon Creek in an attempt to discover where the aluminum originated. So we collected water during times of average water levels or base flow, also during spring snow melt runoff, and during the monsoon rainy season. And what we found was that there was no clear origin of where the aluminum was coming from. And the Environment Department had said to us at the very beginning of this project that perhaps that aluminum is naturally occurring. And so if that's the case, and that is what we found to be true, I mean, this is wilderness. There aren't any mines there. There's nobody driving. It's pretty pristine and remote country. So we concluded after the end of our study that it's naturally occurring aluminum, and that probably what should happen is that Mogollon Creek should be removed from the impaired stream list in New Mexico. And then we did another project, which we are finishing up right now. And that is a watershed-based plan for Black Canyon, which is in the, well, the part that we're reviewing is in the Aldo Leopold Wilderness area. And Black Canyon flows into the East Fork of the Gila. And what we did there is to install data loggers in, I believe it was 2011. This has been going on for a while. We installed these data loggers into the stream, and they record the stream temperature every hour. And then at a certain point, we went back and downloaded the data and took a look at that. And the reason that Black Canyon is on the impaired list is because the temperature is too warm to support Gila trout, which are threatened. So there are Gila trout in Black Canyon Creek, but they aren't exactly thriving. And so the Environment Department is trying to figure out what they can do to fix Black Canyon Creek so that the Gila trout do a little bit better there. They were reintroduced there in 1998. And they still are there. A lot of them were removed during the 2013 Silver Fire, and then they were later restocked a couple of times in 2013, 2014, and 2015. And now they're holding on. And so we've been working to develop some strategies of what could happen in Black Canyon Creek to cool the water off so that Gila trout are happier there. And of course, one of the obvious things to do is to plant willows and cottonwoods to shade the creek. So we're working on that project right now, writing up that report. Now, I wanted to talk about some things that are happening in 2016 in the last few minutes of the show. So we have some really kind of cool events coming up. Allison, can you talk a little bit about the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, which is scheduled for January 9th?
Sure. So the Gila Conservation Coalition, along with a number of other groups, are sponsoring the 5th annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival that will be held on Saturday, January 9th at 6 o'clock at the WNMU Light Hall. And it'll be another great showing of the best in environmental films from the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, which is an annual event that happens every January in California. And then you get a choice, sponsoring organizations like ourselves. We can pick films that we want to show, and basically the film fest goes on tour, so to speak, across the country. So we're one of hundreds of organizations that puts on the Wild and Scenic Film Fest every year. So we've got a great selection of films. We'll be talking more about the film fest on the January 5th, 2016 show. We'll have a couple special guests, but just to give you a quick preview, we've got a couple films on the Colorado River. Pete McBride, a great National Geographic photographer, has another Colorado River related film out. There are other films on water quality issues, drinking water as a human right, as well as some really fun shorts. So we'll talk more about those on the show on January 5th.
Okay. And there's another event coming up in April, so that's Earth Day, and that is on Friday, April 22nd. And then the next day, April 23rd, in Gough Park, we'll have all the groups, all the local environmental groups, they are talking about their issues. So one other big thing coming up in 2016 is forest planning. And I thought I'd ask you to explain that briefly here, Nathan.
So the Gila National Forest, along with all the other national forests across the country, are required to update their forest plans. The Gila National Forest Plan is from 1986, and so starting next year, it'll be 30 years old. And so they have to address a host of new issues such as climate change, socioeconomic factors, drought, things of that nature that weren't addressed in the 86 document. So forest planning will be a huge part of 2016. There'll be another round of public meetings where public comments and input will actually start to go on the record. This year, forest planning has essentially been kind of like a heads up. This is what's coming. And so we've had those rounds of public meetings, but 2016 will actually kick off the actual National Environmental Policy Act process. So expect to see a lot of activity with the forest and the Gila National Forest moving forward in 2016.
And if people are interested in getting it involved, what should they do?
They can easily go to the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance website, which is nmwild.org. They can also contact me. My email address is nathan@nmwild.org. Or just feel free to, you know, talk to anybody that's involved with all the volunteering projects we have with wilderness inventories, wild and scenic inventories, to get engaged.
And they can also go to the Gila National Forest website and check out the forest planning information.
Yeah, the forest planning information on the Gila National Forest is very up-to-date, which is great. So, yeah.
So you mentioned National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, on forest planning. And, Allison, you talked earlier in the show about NEPA on the diversion. Is there anything else that we need to know about NEPA on the Gila River diversion?
Yeah, just quickly, I neglected to say I really want people to understand that, you know, these supplemental terms spell out a very important thing, and that is that the principles, requirements, and guidelines which the Obama administration is mandating that all agencies follow, sort of an enhanced sort of set of requirements for assessing big water development projects. And so the supplemental term said that the PRNGs are going to be applied to the New Mexico unit. So in terms of NEPA, we expect that if we have a very rigorous and objective NEPA process, it's going to be highly unlikely that a diversion project can go forward. I mean, there's so many problems with it. So scoping is going to happen sometime mid-2016. 2016. So the CAP entity is going to come forward with a proposed action. There'll be lots of meetings and opportunity for public comment. So stay tuned on that. And it just so happens that the timing is, you know, overlapping with the forest planning NEPA process.
Right. So part of NEPA does involve public comment. So that's a really important thing for local people who are concerned. I want to thank you very much, Allison and Nathan, for being with me on today's show. Thank you to our audio engineer extraordinaire, Kyle Johnson. And I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning into this week's program. You can go to Gila Members Community Radio on the Earth Matters page for archives of all the shows, including today's, if you missed any of it, or because it was so excellent you want to hear it again. Best wishes to all of our listeners for a peaceful 2016. I'm Donna Stevens. Please join us next week and next year for another edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is what community radio looks and sounds like.